Hello, everyone. This is Steve Sykes, and you're listening to the Front Row Network, the podcast network for people who actually like movies. Today, we're offering up a monster cast edition of Full Disclosure, where we take a spooky movie and spoil the heck out of it for you. I'm really excited about this episode because we are looking at the just-released film Antebellum, starring the delightful and hypnotic Janelle Monáe. The movie is written and directed by up-and-comers Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz, also known as Bush and Renz in the credits, who up to now have been known primarily for their work in music videos and short films that have a social consciousness and kind of an edge to them. And this film has already drawn some comparisons with the revolutionary horror film work of writer-director Jordan Peele. So we'll see if it lives up to that billing. But before we dig into Antebellum, just a reminder that this is Full Disclosure, and our discussion will be chock full of spoilers. So if you want to watch Antebellum without any foreknowledge about what happens, press pause right now. Go watch the movie and come on back. I will be patiently waiting. Okay, so Antebellum starts in the midst of the American Civil War, where a Louisiana plantation is being run by a Confederate Army platoon. Slaves are treated harshly and not allowed to speak without permission. Those who attempt to escape are killed and their bodies burned in a crematorium. We meet one of the slaves, whom her masters have named Eden, played by Janelle Monáe. This character then becomes the point of view for the story. She is the captive and rape victim of an unnamed Confederate general who leads the platoon. In their first interaction, the general ends up branding Eden with what we assume is the plantation brand, a stylized BD. A group of new slaves is brought into the plantation, and among them is a pregnant woman. The plantation owner, Elizabeth, names this new slave Julia and places her in the care of Eden. Julia asks Eden to plan an escape, but Eden urges her to keep her head down. That evening, a Confederate soldier named Daniel beats Julia when she speaks to him without permission, causing her to miscarry. Meanwhile, after being raped by the general yet again, Eden falls asleep. And this is where things start to go a little sideways. She awakens in the present day, as Veronica Henley, a renowned sociologist. She's preparing to take a trip to speak at a seminar and promote her book, which is called Shedding the Coping Persona. It's a book about how marginalized people reluctantly assimilate into a preferred role to survive in a society that's ruled by the majority. So she makes this trip to Louisiana to promote the book, and she meets some old friends and agrees to go to dinner with them. Now, this is where we see Elizabeth, yes, the plantation owner, but she is now in this modern world posing as a representative of a private company. And she sneaks into Veronica's hotel room, trashes the room, and steals Veronica's lipstick. Meanwhile, back at dinner, Veronica and her friends have a really good time, and they leave the restaurant. Veronica gets into what she thinks is an Uber ride, but it turns out to be driven by Elizabeth and her husband, Jasper, who we recognize as one of the other Confederacy soldiers, knocks her out. So once she's knocked out, Veronica wakes up again in the 1800s, supposedly, apparently, and tells her fellow captive Eli, whose wife had been killed during their previous failed attempt, that they will once again try to escape. This is prompted by the pregnant slave's, Julia's, suicide. She hangs herself after miscarrying her child. So Veronica steals the general's cell phone while he is asleep, but drops it when Daniel walks by. Eli, who has been watching Veronica's back, kills Daniel with a hatchet. Then they find out that the phone can only be unlocked with facial recognition. So Veronica goes back to the cabin and finds out that the general is awake. And Eli comes in and joins the struggle. He is killed trying to protect Veronica. And she manages to stab the general with his own sword before unlocking the phone and sending her location to her husband back at home, who we learn has been frantically looking for her. So as she hides the general in the crematorium, Jasper runs into her, and she, thinking really quickly, says, "Oh, the general's in trouble, the general's in trouble," and lures Jasper and another guard into the crematorium and sets it on fire, leaving the three men to burn to death as she steals the general's horse and rides off. Elizabeth then pursues her on horseback and reveals that she handpicked every slave on the plantation except for Veronica, whom she kidnapped at her father's insistence. Veronica knocks Elizabeth off her horse and puts a rope around her neck, dragging her along until she hits a statue of Robert E. Lee, breaking her neck. Veronica flees the pursuing soldiers into the chaos of a battle, revealing what we have come to suspect, that the plantation is actually a part of a Civil War reenactment park in the modern day, which is owned by the general under his real name, Blake Denton, thus the BD brand. And Blake Denton isn't just some guy, some rich guy with a reenactment camp park. He is a senator. So the implication is that this white supremacist playground is frequented and run by very elite, undercover, if you will, closeted white supremacist. So Veronica escapes as the police arrive to liberate her and the other captives, and the park is shut down afterwards. So let's sort this out. First of all, we're tricked into believing that Eden and Veronica are two different characters from two different times. And that's a bit problematic, as we'll talk about in a moment. But of course, they're revealed to be the same person. But that's only one of two tricks that the writers throw at us. The second is telling the story out of order. So if you re-edited the movie to flow chronologically, you'd start with Veronica, the author, and follow her modern story through to her getting kidnapped, then continue back from the beginning of the movie. And the fact that Antebellum has two bits of deceptive storytelling going on at the same time kind of makes it trample on the line between mysterious and confusing. Some people who've watched this movie have gone from intrigued at the kind of puzzle box narrative to just downright frustrated and confused. But there's how the story lines up chronologically. Now, here's the other thing that makes you go, when talking about Annabellum, the movie. It very closely resembles the plot of a 1979 novel named Kindred by the legendary sci-fi writer Octavia E. Butler. How closely does it resemble it? Well, in Kindred, a young African-American woman writer named Idana, who goes by Dana, finds herself bouncing back and forth between her Los Angeles home in 1976 and a pre-Civil War Maryland plantation. There she meets her ancestors and ends up, through her actions, moving the abolitionist cause forward a little bit. So the difference between the two stories is, in one, there's actual time travel taking place as the protagonist goes back and forth between the Civil War era, the pre-Civil War era, or the antebellum era, and the modern day in 1976. The book really explored the legacy of slavery and its lingering effects on Black Americans, widely renowned, kind of a genre crossover between science fiction and Black American literature. It is very much an elevated work. Now, Annabellum, on the other hand, you've got a protagonist that is revealed to be the same character as the slave persona named Eden. And it kind of restricts its commentary to noting how insidiously prevalent white supremacists are in modern society. And it's really on the nose on a couple of spots like that. For instance, we find when we had the final big reveal that this is in fact a Civil War reenactment park, at the front of the grounds is a statue of Robert E. Lee. Now, it doesn't take much of a stretch to speculate that this statue is the statue that formerly resided in the capital of Virginia, which has been the source of a lot of controversy recently. And the fact that the slave owner slash conservative pundit Elizabeth breaks her neck on that monument is kind of a shot at how white supremacy can kill you in the end, literally. So Annabellum, by focusing on the specific elements of white supremacy today, kind of comes off as a cross between The Hunt, which was the liberal elite versus MAGA deplorable satire that came out earlier this year. And man, it's been a long year. But it seems like a cross between that and The Village by M. Night Shyamalan. And it kind of gives you kind of end up feeling a little cheated at the end, only because those two comparisons are, they jump immediately to mine. So it goes from kind of like this revolutionary, innovative bit of storytelling into something that we have seen before. Now, that's not to say that Annabellum isn't worth watching. It definitely is. And it's one of those movies you may find yourself watching twice the second time to pick everything up that you missed in the original telling, kind of like a sixth sense sort of situation. But it is kind of disappointing because despite some really fantastic visual sequences and some amazing acting, which we'll get into in a moment, it kind of feels like this would have been a much better movie if the two writer-directors said, you know what, we're just going to do a straight-up adaptation of Kindred. I think that all of the actors would have been well-equipped to portray that story. And you could have gotten into a little bit more depth and meat about how the legacy of slavery has affected where Black America is today. But about those performances, this is an extremely well-acted movie, and especially the lead, Janelle Monáe, who is my everyday person crush. She is tremendously talented. You probably know she's an amazing singer. But her acting chops, between this and the second season of Homecoming on Amazon Prime, and also the biopic about the Black women in NASA. Those three performances right there just set her up as a actress to really watch in that right, in addition to all of her musical prowess. The cast in general, we see a lot of hard-to-watch anguish by these slaves. It's well acted. It doesn't pull any punches. And in fact, the best claim Antebellum has to being a real horror movie, after all, this is an episode of MonsterCast, is its depiction of the horror of slavery itself. I want to note one other really fantastic performance in a supporting role by, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, I should have looked it up before I went to record this, but Gabouri Sidibe, many of you may remember her as Precious from the 2009 movie of the same name. In Antebellum, she plays Veronica's best friend forever, Dawn, and pretty much takes over every scene that she's in. She is bodacious and just pure joy whenever she's on screen, and it makes a nice relief from the tension and the angst that you'll find in a lot of the rest of the film. So, like I said, Antebellum is definitely worth the watch, even with some of the issues we've talked about. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the movie. So drop a note in the comments section of whatever social media channel you happen to get this link from, and tell me what you thought about the movie. Do you think it was a ripoff of other recent movies, or did it stand on its own for you? And did it have the impact of making you take a fresh look of at slavery and the impact that it has even yet today on our society and culture? So with that, we're going to wrap it up for this edition of Full Disclosure. Remember, the Front Row Network is the place to be this month as we give you the info on 30 Halloween movies during MonsterCast. And if I may be so bold, I'd like to encourage you especially to check out a MonsterCast episode of the new Front Row podcast, A View from the Back Row, hosted by yours truly, in which Brandon Davis and I take a look at Wait Until Dark. For details on MonsterCast and all the rest of the vast content available on the Front Row Network, check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages, as well as npr-illinois.org/programs/front-row-network. Or just do a search for NPR Illinois and Front Row, and you'll find us. Until the next time we meet, I will see you in the front row. Happy Halloween.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio Illinois. For more from the Front Row Network, including our articles or our other dozens of shows, visit thefrontrownetwork.com or nprillinois.org/programs/frontrownetwork. You can also find us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z.